Exodus chapter 3 is where we'll begin. We're actually going to cover chapters 3 and 4, but tonight we'll begin by reading verse number 1. It says, "Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the backside of the desert, and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb, and the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire, out of the midst of a bush, and he looked. And behold, the bush was burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, Now I will turn aside now and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here am I. Let's bow our heads together in prayer. Our Father, in the fleeting moments of this meeting tonight, I pray that your Holy Spirit would do His work. Father, I thank you for the example of Moses and how many years ago he yielded to a call that you placed upon his life. Lord, I believe this room is filled with people tonight that you've called to do a specific task. Lord, some of them already know what it is. Tonight I pray that you would drive that nail even deeper into their heart. But Lord, there are some here tonight that don't have a clue. Lord, I'm convinced there are some that came to this room tonight that, Lord, when they came, they had no more intention of going into some aspect of ministry than anything else. And Lord, tonight is their night. I pray that your word would do its work and that it'd be like a hammer that breaks the rock into pieces. Lord, that it would divide asunder the joints and marrow and help us, and it would be a discerner of the thoughts and the intents of the hearts. And God, tonight, that people would hear your call like Moses of old. We ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Most of you in this room tonight have a device called a cell phone. Now, it amazes me how that even, if I could say it respectfully, some of the old-timers have finally conceded to the cell phone era. To be honest, I've not heard anybody or seen anybody carrying a rotary dial phone on their hip in recent days. Truth is, some of you tonight, you say, what in the world is a rotary dial phone? That shows how old I was. Many times calling my mamaw on a rotary dial phone, dialing 998-4670. And calling her and seeing how she was doing. I'd do that on every Saturday. I would stick my finger in that dial and I would turn it to the metal clasp and let it go. But you know, we're such spoiled brats. I remember when Touch Tone came out. I remember Touch Tone in particular because one day I didn't realize that if you just push a lot of buttons, you'll call a lot of wrong numbers. I was so infatuated with hearing the noises of the tones, trying to play certain tunes, and then occasionally hearing a lady or a man speak up and say, hello, and I'm like, what is that? I remember coming to the college, and after a couple of years being on staff, having my first cell phone. It was about the size of a brick. Had an antenna that you pulled out, and it was just heavy. And battery didn't hold a good charge, and you felt like, you know, the old Inspector Gadget movies where you just take it and put it up to your head, and it was just such a huge thing. But after that, I remember graduating to a flip phone. I thought that was the greatest thing. I mean, after all, now what was the size of a brick is about the size of a McDonald's cheeseburger, and all you do is just flip it open. And so, and then after that, I finally graduated to having a smartphone. And let me let you in on a secret. Many people don't know this, but since Brother Comfort's not here tonight, I'll tell you, the chancellor of the college now has a smartphone. Now, so far, we have successfully taught him where the dialing pad is at and a few basic necessities, but we're hoping to get him started at least in the basics of life. But you know, I can still remember from the early days of cell phone usage, there were two words that I absolutely hated to see on my screen when I was expecting a call. I can still remember there would be times I thought to myself, boy, they're going to call me back in a few minutes. And you know how sometimes we leave our ringer off or we put it on vibrate, and So you check your phone religiously. You make sure that the lever is flipped a certain way, or you make sure the right button is pushed. And I can still remember times where I would set that phone down and I would pick up a good book and I'd begin to read, expecting a phone call, say, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Getting so engrossed in the book, and I think to myself, wow, what time is it? And it's 4:15, and it was a very important phone call. And running over to the counter and in disgust, picking up my phone, checking the ringer, it's on, but yet seeing on the screen two words, missed call. You ever seen those two words? Some of you are like, sometimes that's a good thing to miss a call. But I'm talking about a call that you expected. I'm talking tonight about a call of the greatest importance. I'm talking about her call, young man. I'm talking about his call. And by the way, if you miss her call or his call, and that person thinks you need to be at their every beck and call, probably be best to cool things off. I do want you to know, not all of us live with a cell phone in hand just waiting for it to be your call. But you know, while it may be a horrible thing to miss a call from a parent, to miss a call from a friend, to miss a call that is of the greatest importance out there, maybe it's somebody that's calling you to deliver great information, the most horrible thing perhaps you can do when it comes to missing a call is to miss a call from God. Now I realize tonight, being in this environment, being in this setting, I would say the vast majority of you are here because you sense a call in your life. Somehow, some way, God has brought you to this point. You say, all right. And by the way, let me make a disclaimer. Some people accuse me of thinking that I believe that everybody is going to be in full-time Christian service. First of all, I can tell you this. Listen, I realize not every young man is going to be a preacher. After all, I need somebody to preach to, right? I'm going to concede tonight. I'm going to tell you, I realize that not every young lady is going to marry a preacher. I understand that. We don't need people who are mama called and daddy sent. They're not going to hold up. But I'm going to tell you, while I acknowledge that tonight, I think all of us can acknowledge one thing. Every one of us in this room is a child of God. We've been called to serve God. And not only that, every person in this room, while you may not know what you're called to do, listen to me, you ought to be willing right now, this moment, to do anything God bids you to do. I think we can all agree on that, whether we like it or not. But tonight I want to talk to you how that back many years ago, God reached down and took the heart of a man named Moses and said, Moses, I want you. Some of you say tonight, Moses was one of the greatest men in the Old Testament. Why, of course, God could use Moses, but I want you to know the same insecurity and the same fear that gripped Moses' heart is the same fear that grips some of you tonight. The same lack of confidence, the same uncertainty that plagued Moses continues to keep people from hearing God's call. And so my message tonight, I have two purposes tonight. Number one, for those of you, you say, hey, I'm called to preach or I'm called to serve in some form of ministry. Tonight, you need to make that sacred ground and never forget it. But there are some of you tonight, you've been fighting, you've been resisting. You've said to yourself, I've got better plans, and tonight God is going to look down to you just like Moses and call you by name, so to speak. And I want you to understand several things that are important in discerning the call of God in your life. Number one tonight, I want you to see that God's call is specific. We find that in verse number 4. We come to the beginning. God calls a man by the name of Moses. It says, and when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, here am I. When you see in Scripture the times when people's names are addressed twice, it's not always because they're in trouble and they're about to get a spanking, but one thing's for sure, what's about to come next is of great importance. You ever had times in your household where your parents may not have called your name twice, but they reminded you of your first and middle name? Why did they do that? Because of a sense of urgency. Because they wanted to get your attention. And here the Creator of the universe calls Moses by name. When I say God's call is specific tonight, I'm saying first of all that God calls a specific person. Moses. There was only one person He had chosen to lead the nation of Israel, His name Moses. And can I tell you, Moses, if anybody had a messed up background and story, it was Moses. You ever hear people's life stories? Sometimes you're like, wow, that's different. There's some of you tonight, you say, I'll be honest, if I shared my life story with people, they would look at me and say, whoa, that's different. Can I tell you, different's not bad. Here's the thing that I've learned in my life. God was working in my life a long time before I ever realized it. Some of you tonight come from a broken home. Don't you dare think for a moment that that disqualifies you from serving God. Some of you tonight, you say, my parents, they're not good Christians. You say, my parents, I'm telling you, they're just not the most spiritual people. Don't you think for a moment that that forfeits you from serving God. You're here tonight and you say, well, I'll tell you what, it's just, I've had such a messed up life. I've had things in my background that I wouldn't wish for anybody else. Listen to me, there was a man named Moses. His life wasn't smooth either. Some of you are like, oh yes it was. Well, not all of it was. How many of you, if you got in dorm devotion, say, now let me tell you my life story tonight. Hey, whenever I was just a kid, just a little baby, my mama put me in a basket and put me out on the river. And boy, I was floating out on the river. And lo and behold, I wind up at Pharaoh's daughter's house. Anybody got a testimony that good? You'd have to probably make it up. Then after that, it sweetened up a little bit. And Moses said, oh, I'll tell you what, here I was in the lap of luxury. I had everything that I wanted. I mean, I had servants, I had the highest education, I had all kinds of amenities that Israelites never knew, and boy, I was raised in the lap of luxury, but then, boy, one day my life really changed. Standing out there, I was watching one day and Egyptians being cruel to the Israelites, and finally I let my temper get the best of me, and I killed a man and buried him in the sand, and then before too long, I had to run away from everything that I ever knew. No more luxuries, no more of the finest foods, no more of the finest drink, no more of the finest clothing. And then I find myself on the backside of a desert, alone, tending sheep. For day after day after day, just hearing, bah, bah. You know, Moses, his life didn't have the most normalcy either. But when you understand something tonight, God doesn't predicate His call upon your background. I'll tell you what, God calls you and He's preparing you long before you ever know it. Now there are some of you tonight, you say, well, I don't think God could ever use somebody like me. Listen tonight, if God could use Moses, I can tell you, God can use you. God calls a specific person, but sometimes the devil makes us feel, listen, the truth is outside of Jesus, all of us are unworthy. I understand that. But when God reaches down in Missouri and He touches a boy's heart, or He reaches down in Connecticut, or He reaches down in South Carolina, and He calls that specific person, it's of the greatest importance. But you know, He calls specific people to do specific tasks. I'm going to let you in on a secret. Do you know there are some of you tonight that can do things that I can't do? There are people that you can reach that I can't reach. They look at me and they say, he's too old. But they look at you and say, no, I like talking to her. They look at you and listen, there's a certain ability, there's a certain inroad. I was marveling this summer. I was watching one of the young men work with teenagers. It was just like he was a magnet. Poof. It's like, how does that happen? You're in here tonight, you say, well, I don't have any abilities, I don't have any talent. Listen, if you feel that way tonight, stand up after the service and just announce to the entire world that God made a mistake in making you because you're useless. You're like, that wouldn't be good. You're right, because it's wrong. Because your thinking is wrong. What did God want Moses to do? He said, I want you to go and I want you to deliver the children of Israel. In verse number 9, he basically says that. He has a specific task. There was one man that God raised up to lead an entire nation. But you know, there are some young ladies in this room tonight. You know what your calling in life is? You're going to marry a preacher and you're going to go out west and you're going to encourage him when all the odds are against him. And you're going to think, well, that just seems insignificant when it's the greatest task you can do if God's called you to do it. There's some of you guys right now, you're not much to look at, and maybe other people can't discern what's happening in your life. But one day you're going to be a pastor, or you're going to be a missionary, or you're going to serve in a Christian camp, and you're going to go out there and you're going to serve the Lord. And listen, God has you to do something because He's gifted you to do it. For Moses, it was leading the nation of Israel. I want to ask you, what is it in your life tonight? It's good to sit in the dorms and dream a little bit about the future. God's called you to be a preacher, a pastor. You say, I don't know exactly where, but it's okay to dream about it. Ladies, you may not know ultimately where you're going to end up right now. Maybe you're in the L-Ed program and you're just dreaming of inflicting pain upon students like was inflicted upon you. But whatever the case, remember tonight, God's call is specific. He calls specific people to do specific things. God's call is specific. Number two tonight, I want you to see that God is holy. Now, an interesting thing happens. Moses is out in the wilderness, and he's a good Baptist. I think Moses would have been a Baptist. Why? Because he was nosy. You ever have people on campus that are nosy? People in your dorm that are nosy? I remember we had a guy years ago, he had a bionic ear when I was in the dorm. He could hold it out and you could hear a conversation in the next room as clear as day. We made him get rid of it. But here Moses is walking along and he looks and he sees this bush, it's burning and yet it's not consumed. And he says to himself, I will now turn aside and see this great sight and why this bush is not burnt. Moses comes and he sees this burning bush and all of a sudden he hears a voice that says, draw not nigh hither. Put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. You know what I'm convinced of tonight? I'm convinced of this. Moses would have missed his calling had he failed to acknowledge that God is holy and he too must be holy. Holiness is a curse word in our society, and I'm afraid it's a shaming word in our churches. You know what bothers me sometimes? It bothers me to see two things. Number one, it bothers me to see the attitude of some people about standard people. When people have lower standards in themselves, how they ridicule them and how they mock them. I don't think that's very Christian. But I'll tell you, it bothers me too when I see somebody mock those that have higher standards than them. I'm not here to tell you tonight where all those lines need to be drawn, but I can tell you a pretty good guiding principle. When it comes to whatever your standards ought to be, you ought to strive for holiness. I'm going to tell you tonight why some people don't hear the call of God, even in a Bible college setting. It's because their ears are so chock full of the world, they can't hear what God is saying. I preached earlier this week about the world. You know the world clouds your thinking. My dad, he'd get intoxicated, and he could act like an 8-year-old child. But I'm telling you, the world gets into the hearts and the minds of some young people, and they too are intoxicated. And as a result, all along, you're going to miss God's best, or you're going to delay it. What am I saying tonight? Do you really want to know what God has for you? Then I'll tell you what, take your sin and set it aside and say, take the world, but give me Jesus. You can't draw nigh to God without forsaking another chapter of the world. You can't draw closer to Him without turning your back on the world. Sometimes we're like Lot's wife. We look back for whatever reason. her case, it had a devastating effect. There may be some of you in this room tonight, the reason you struggle mightily is because you know that you need to still get right with God and purge those idols out of your life. Tonight is the time for you to take off your shoes, realize you're on holy ground, and listen to God more than the world. I'm just telling, if you want to hear His call tonight, listen, call the world for what it is. Take off your shoes, Moses, you're on holy ground. Number one, God is specific. Number two, God is holy. Number three, if you're going to hear the call of God, you have to realize that people are hurting. Now listen to the verses that I read in verses 7 through 9. It says, "And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. And I am come down to deliver them out of the hands of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of the land into a good land and large, and unto a land flowing with milk and honey, unto the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. Now therefore behold, the cry of the children of Israel is come unto me. And I have also seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppress them." You know, there's a disease that has infected us since the dawn of humanity. It's been with us a long time before the millennial generation came, and it'll be with us a long time after, until Jesus comes and beyond. It's called self-centeredness. Now, in just a few moments, I'm going to talk to you about needs, and I understand this. Just because there's a need doesn't mean that God has called you to do it. For instance, tonight I could talk about the need in Kenya, Africa, how that one of our graduates, Michael Rains, needs more co-laborers to help him outside of Nairobi. But I think it's pretty safe to say tonight that God hasn't called every one of us to meet that need. There's a need out west. Some of you young men, you know what you need to do? You need to gather your friends up, you need to get out in a car, and you need to drive in the state of Wyoming or go out to Montana and see city after city that has welcome from the Lutheran Church, the Evangelical Free Church, the Catholic Church, but not a Baptist church to be found. There are some of you young ladies tonight. You'd do well to see the hurting hearts of people that God wants you to help. Go out of places and see people that are broken and see how their hopes have been dashed by sin. But one of the things that robs us of a burden and a sense of urgency and even the sense of God's calling is we've become so self-centered. We're more concerned about our image than God's. We're more concerned about our own comfort. We're more concerned about our own things, and we become so self-centered. I'm convinced tonight Moses would have never heard the call had he not gotten his eyes off of himself and heard the cries of the nation of Israel. You see, God heard the cries of the nation of Israel, didn't He? He heard how they hurt. Notice with me in verse number 7. He said, "I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt." God looked down and He said, "Listen, I see every stripe that's laid upon the back of an Israelite because of an Egyptian taskmaster." He said, "I see every stripe." By the way, God sees your affliction tonight. He said, "I have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters." He said, "Not only did I see the stripes," He said, "I've heard it with my ear." He heard the moans of the Israelite boys as they bowed under that torture. I believe He heard the cry of every Israelite mother that watched her son crumple in agony. And by the way, He hears your cry too. But then He says, "For I know their sorrows." God looked down on the nation of Israel. Not only did He see the stripes, not only did He hear the cries, but He saw something that nobody else could see. He saw the pain that was in their hearts. One of the reasons I believe there's a dearth sometimes of people going in the ministry in some pockets is because we're so focused upon ourselves. You know what I hope? I hope for all of you this semester you see some things that disturb you. You say, you really do? I really do. There's some of you tonight that need to be jerked out of your comfort zone and go into a trailer park and you can't figure out who's the mother and who's the father because the truth is neither one of them reside in the trailer park and the kids are herded like cattle. Instead of walking out of there in some pharisaical fashion, you ought to bow your head, thank God for the family that He's given you and not rub it into your mom and dad's face and obey them and say, by God's grace, I want to reach those people. You guys go to Crossroads at 7 o'clock in the morning. Don't you think for a bit it's all about you and your preaching. Why don't you preach the Word and go pour yourself? You might get a lesson or two in what you hear from them. I remember one time there was a lady who came to our house. She'd just been newly married and saved out of a drug life like you wouldn't believe. She was in our home and one day she started talking about her past. Now I'll tell you, if any of our children had been there, we would have hushed her. She didn't use any terrible, crude language, but nonetheless, it was graphic enough. I would not have wanted any of my children to hear it. But my wife and I sat there and we looked at each other and you know what we realized? We realized that to an extent, our hearts had been blinded because we'd been in such a bubble that we'd forgotten about the needs of people. I'm not saying you need to be educated about the ways of the world. I'm not saying that you need to go online and see the worst of the worst. But here's what I'm saying. You better open your eyes and you better open your ears and you better start hearing what God hears. There's some people somewhere, somehow, God has in the future for you to minister to, and it may be that God hears their cries, but you can't because your mind is so full of the world. If you're going to hear the call of God, you've got to get your eyes off of self and you've got to realize people around you are hurting. You're never going to lead a nation of Israel if you don't care about Israel. If you're just worried about your own creature comfort, you'll never do anything for God. Some of you tonight need to be taken out of your comfort zone and you need to pray at the beginning of a semester, God, would you help me to see the hurt of people this semester unlike any other time in my life? And Lord, even let me feel some of it. I'm talking to some upperclassmen tonight. You've stagnated. And tonight, God needs to turn your world upside down. God's call is specific. God is holy. People are hurting. But here's another thing that you need to remember when it comes to surrendering to God's call, and it's this, that God is all you need. Right now, some of you say, I need $1,000. Today I was able to talk to a couple of our students and deliver some good news to them about some help that was coming their way financially. It won't be very long. You'll start thinking the first of every month, I need some money. There are times when you don't pay your bills that I think, yeah, they need some money, Lord, because we need some money. Sometimes you look at the work and you say, there's no way that it can get done. Notice in verse number 10, come now, therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. So God's very plain. He's very clear. Don't you like it when things are clear? God said, this is what I want you to do. I want you to go to this man and tell him to get these people out of here, they're mine. And Moses said unto God, who am I that I should go unto Pharaoh and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt? Now, usually when you hear the phrase, who am I, that's usually got a positive connotation. It turns me off to hear people say, don't you know who I am? But it's refreshing when you hear some people say, who am I? But Moses says it to a fault. Moses says it like some of you, who am I? I don't have a spectacular testimony. I wasn't hurled out of a 10-story window and caught by firemen, saved from devil-worshipping neighborhoods, and has some dramatic testimony. Who am I? Some of you tonight, you say, who am I? You say, I'm just so ordinary. You say, my life, it's just so boring. Tonight you say, who am I? You say, I don't really have talent. I can't do it. Moses thought the same thing. He said, who am I? And you know what God responds to him in verse number 13? Watch this, or verse number 12. And he said, now I like this first word, certainly. Verily. I mean certainly. I will be with thee. You know, so often we want the presence of mama. Even college students want the presence of mama sometimes. You don't have to raise your hand and admit it. By the way, I'm talking about guys. You want the presence of her, you want the presence of him. But so often we seek a human presence more than a divine one. So I need money tonight. No, I'll tell you, you just need to be reminded, certainly I will be with thee. And this shall be a token unto thee that I have sent thee. When thou hast brought forth the people out of Egypt, ye shall serve God upon this mountain. God gives a promise. He said, listen, you're going to go do the task, and this is what's going to happen. And all of us think to ourselves, and that's when Moses should have said, yes, sir, that's what I'm going to do. But he didn't. His faith was weak, like some of us tonight. And Moses said unto God, behold, when I come unto the children of Israel and shall say unto them, the God of your fathers hath sent me unto you, and they'll say to me, what is his name? What shall I say unto them? More questions, more uncertainty. But time forbids us to really explain to the greatest extent the meaning of verse 14, but notice it. And God said unto Moses, I am that I am. And thus he said, thou shalt say unto the children of Israel, I am hath sent me unto you. In our Western mindset, we have a tendency to read that, it seems, and I say it respectfully, we seem to see it as gibberish. I am that I am. We look at it in our Western mindset, we say, well, I am that I am. That's a weird name. But, you know, you ought to talk to Brother Dylan about that name sometime. Let me tell you, when every Hebrew set their eyes upon this, when he said, I am that I am, Jehovah was declaring, I am the self-existent one. Listen, regardless of what the liberal tells you, nobody created God. He's not a figment of your imagination. I'll tell you what's a figment of your imagination, evolution. Do you realize, as a child of God, called to serve God, listen to me, do you realize who's behind you tonight? Somebody far better than the president of any nationality, somebody who's far better than any royalty, somebody who is far greater than the person that has the greatest purse strings in the world. I'm talking about the Creator, the self-existent one. Some of you tonight, you say, well, I need a degree to serve the Lord. I'm glad you're striving for that, and I think you ought to work towards it. But you need something a lot greater than a degree. You need God. You know why people drop out? Because either they think that God is dead or they've lost sight of the fact that God is all they need. I'm telling you, there's some of you tonight, listen, this week you will be, or in the months to come, you'll be tempted. You'll be tempted. I need this. I need rest. I need money. I need this material possession. But all along, listen, you're going to miss God's call until you come to grips with the fact God is all you need. Everything that you need to do His work, He's able to give you. You see, God's call is specific. You see, God is holy. You see, people are hurting. You see tonight that God is all that you need. But I want to remind you of two things in chapter 4, and we're done. I want you to see tonight that God will equip you to do the work. I don't know how many times in my life I came to a threshold and I came to this conclusion very early on, I can't do it. Let me tell you, after you get married for 20 years, you'll have instances where you say, I can't do this. There's instances in life where you say, I don't think I have this in me. And the truth is you do, you just don't know it. Notice with me in Exodus chapter 4 and verse number 1. And Moses answered and said, But behold, they will not believe me, nor hearken unto my voice, for they will say, The Lord hath not appeared unto thee. You say, did he really say it that way? I don't think he said it dry. Some of you know how to whine. I've heard it. Well, I don't think I can do this. They'll say, The Lord hath not appeared unto thee. And the Lord said unto him, What is that in thine hand? And he said, A rod. And he said, Cast it on the ground. And he cast it on the ground, and it became a serpent. And Moses did the same thing I would do. He fled before it. You're here tonight. You say, I don't have much. Let me tell you, God will take what's in your hand, and if He calls you to do it, you can use it for His honor and glory. Just a regular, ordinary staff. Some of you folks tonight, you think God takes and He uses the spectacular. No, often what God does is He takes the ordinary and makes it spectacular. He takes an ordinary rod. Moses casts it on the ground. It turns into a snake. I'm a country boy, but I hate snakes. My dad would not let me kill black snakes and king snakes because king snakes killed copperheads, black snakes killed rats, but I hated it. Copperheads I'd gladly shoot at the drop of a hat. Turns into a snake. Moses runs. And then God tells Moses, Put forth thine hand and take it by the tail. Had I been Moses, I'd have said, Thank you, Lord, by the tail. That gives me less chance of dying. Just as Moses ran from it, God instructed him to go, and he had to exercise faith, did he not? I'm not here to tell you tonight the work of the Lord is easy, but I'm telling you God has empowered us, and if we will trust Him, we can do the work. Moses picks it up and turns into a rod again. And as if that wasn't enough, notice what he says in the next verse. Actually, verse number 6, And the Lord said furthermore unto him, Put now thy hand into thy bosom. And he put his hand into his bosom, and when he took it out, behold, his hand was as leprous as snow. We read that, but we don't understand the magnitude of that. We're talking about a disease that in many instances was a death sentence. I mean, it's like you pull your hand out and now you're talking about a limb of your body that's going to rot off. You don't go into town and flash your hand and say, Look, I got leprosy, because they're going to kick you out. You'll find yourself in a leper colony and you find yourself in a bad state. He says, Stick your hand in there. Moses pulls it out. It's leprous. And hopefully before Moses could have a heart attack, it was then God said this. He said, Put thine hand into thy bosom again. And he put his hand into the bosom again and plucked it out of his bosom, and behold, it was returned again as his other flesh. Boy, had I been Moses, I think I'd have said, Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you. You know, God equipped Moses to do the work. Moses, like, how are they going to believe me? He said, Here, I'll help you out. Here's a staff. Here you'll find, here, there's this miracle. You'll perform these, and it will authenticate before Egypt. They should know that supernatural Jehovah God is behind you. But you know, there's some of you tonight, you're overlooking your staff. There are some of you tonight, listen, God's equipped you. You say, God hasn't equipped me to do anything. You say, tonight, there's no way that I can get the work done. You need to stop tonight and quit wallowing in self-pity, and you need to take the tools that God is using you and get up and use them. You say, I've got a rough home life. Listen, that might be your staff tonight. that God has used to equip you through the years. You say, I've been raised in the perfect Christian home. That may be your staff tonight. And God says, listen, I'm ready to use you. By the way, you can't get the work of God done without His equipping. You know what you're going to find on early on? You're going to say, I can't make it through my freshman year. I'm about to die. And then you become a sophomore. Oh, this is hard. Like it's supposed to get easier. I heard Danny Adrian, we were talking. Danny's like, it's cool coming back as a sophomore. You don't have all these initial fears, you know. But what he doesn't know, I didn't want to tell him right then and spoil his joy, but I'll tell you, sophomore year brings a whole new gamut of things. As a freshman, you're fearful. You're like, oh no, how am I going to make this? What's a 3-hour class? Why did they schedule financial management on Tuesday and freshman orientation on Thursday? It messes with my mind. There'll be a few of you to miss freshman orientation because of that. But it is, you know, by the time you hit your junior year, I don't have a girl in sight. I'm going to die a hermit. It's a whole new set. And let me tell you, once you graduate, it still comes. Still comes to the point where you're like, boy, I wish I could go back and talk to Mr. Burris where I missed his financial management class. That would have been a lot easier than talking to this long-tongued woman. Or man. God will constantly put you at the brink in which He's stretching you. But you know what happens? For every time that God stretches you, He empowers you and He gives you the tools that you need to get the work done. There are some of you tonight, you need to quit cowering in fear. You need to put your flag in the ground and say, you know what, God, this is what I've been called to do and I'm going to do it. But here's the last thing I want to remind you of when it comes to hearing God's call. Remember this. God does not like excuses. And some of you are really good at giving them. You want, you know, I imagine probably in about 5 more years, if Brother Dylan will keep excerpts of what has been called in on the absentee line, I think we can almost provide free tuition. That may be our Rebecca books, you know. We could really handle that. You ever heard some foolish excuses? I told our freshman orientation class, we have more defective alarm clocks in Lattimore, North Carolina per capita than any other place. It's like over in China when they're making them. Send them all to Lattimore. Those college students need to sleep in. I've heard some paltry excuses. I mean, you almost feel like it was, well, there was a dinosaur parked in my driveway. I couldn't get to school today. Just absolutely foolish. I've seen guys when I was in the dean of students' office start to tell me an excuse and then stop in mid-sentence because they knew it wasn't going to fly. I want you to notice what Moses says. Now remember, let me remind you, God's made Himself very plain at this point. It'd be like your RA telling you, now listen, go make your bed. 5 minutes later, go make your bed. 5 minutes later, please go make your bed. How much more plain do you need to be? God said, Moses, I want you to go deliver Israel. Yes, I know that. Moses, I want you to go and deliver Israel. Moses, I know that. I want you to go and deliver Israel. But notice in verse number 10 of chapter 4. And Moses said unto the Lord, now listen to this. Oh my Lord, I'm not eloquent. Neither heretofore nor since thou hast spoken unto thy servant, but I am slow of speech and of slow tongue. Now I'll admit to you tonight, I really could not tell you about the eloquence of the Hebrew language in this passage, but I'm a little bit mesmerized when I read it in English. I've never used the word heretofore. And you're telling me you're not eloquent. Maybe he was. Maybe he was slow of speech. Maybe he was of slow tongue. But he says, God, I am not eloquent. Listen, there are some of you we hear in a preaching class. It's very obvious. You're not eloquent. We're trying to make you eloquent. We're trying to teach you the English language. We're trying to teach you to look at people when you preach to them. We're trying to tell you to be passionate about it. Some of you tonight, you use the same excuse. You say, I don't have the greatest speech ability. Here's my question. Where does it say in the Bible that, you know, you have to provide all of the prerequisites, and if you meet these prerequisites, then God's going to call you to do it? Truth is, some of you have it in you and you just don't know, and God's needing to pull it out of you. What does God respond? Verse number 11, and the Lord said unto him, now here's a series of questions. You remember when your parents gave you questions? Do you want me to come up there? Do you want me to wear you out? Do you want a spanking? Do you want me to give you something to really cry about? Listen to these questions. God says, who hath made man's mouth? Somebody would say, well, if God had asked me that, I'd have said, you did, Lord. No, you wouldn't have said a thing. You'd have just sat there. Who hath made man's mouth? Or who maketh the dumb, or deaf, or the seeing, or the blind? Have not I the Lord? My tongue's not good enough. God said, who made it? You know, there are some of you tonight, you know what holds you back from doing the will of God and the work of God? Your insecurities. You think you've got to do the work. You think you've got to equip yourself. And you throw excuse after excuse. And instead of laying down the will of God tonight, you ought to lay down your excuses. Moses hears from God, now therefore go, and I will be with thy mouth and teach thee what thou wilt say. Here I start hearing the tone of a father that's just saying, Moses, I'm about tired of this. Many of you would said, after that, I would have said, all right, Lord, I understand. There's some of you tonight you're still holding out at this point. Holding on to your flimsy excuse you offered to God. Verse 13. Moses said, O my Lord, send, I pray thee, by the hand of him whom thou wilt send. You say, what does that mean? Well, if you'll just read God's response, you'll find out what Moses was implying. In verse 14, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, now listen to this, is not Aaron the Levite thy brother? I know that he can speak well. And also, behold, he cometh forth to meet thee. And when he seeth thee, he will be glad in his heart. And thou shalt speak unto him and put words in his mouth. And I will be with thy mouth and with his mouth and will teach you what ye shall do. After saying, well, I'm not a very, very, very good speaker. And after hearing God say, Moses, I'll be with your mouth. He says, how about let my brother go? Tonight, I'm glad that God is loving. I'm glad that God is mercy. But you know, I can also kindle God's anger. You may be here tonight. You may not be in the grossest sin, but you kindle the anger of God tonight because you hold on to your excuses more than you do His will. You say, well, He's really angry with a lot of things that's going on in the world today. I wonder if the wrath of God is kindled tonight because there are some of us who have shied away. We have lost our way. We've lost our sight of God's calling. And tonight, in an air-conditioned auditorium, there's the wrath of God. There's an anger that has been kindled because of our excuse-making and our disobedience. You know, more than anything I want for you tonight, more than anything I want for you is to find God's will and do it. There's some of you tonight, you need to take some divine Q-tips and you need to remove the world from your ears. Instead of quit listening to your friends, you need to start listening to God, and you need to get to the point where you say, all right, God, this is what I'm going to do. There's some of you, you've lost your way. You lost your way this summer. You began to wonder, and tonight is your moment to put your flag in the ground. There are others of you tonight, you've been so possessed by your uncertainty, your insecurity, and tonight God says, give me that staff. Put your hand in your bosom. He said, I will equip you. And you need to quit trusting yourself and start trusting God. You'll probably experience this before the semester is over with. You may be expecting the most important of phone calls only to step over to whether it's your iPhone or your Samsung or your old-fashioned flip phone. And you'll pick up that display and you'll see that little display with two familiar words, missed call. It's one thing to miss a call from your mama. I know that's important. But in spite of that, it's an important thing when you miss a call from God. I wonder tonight, will you make an excuse like Moses did, or will you eventually yield like he did? Let's bow our heads tonight. Our heads are bowed, our eyes are closed. I want to ask several questions this evening as we close this service. How many of you in this room, you'd say tonight, you'd say, Brother Beal, I'm in this auditorium and tonight as a student at Ambassador, I can tell you, I know that God has called me to serve Him in some aspect of full-time service. I've definitely sensed that in my heart, and that's why I'm here tonight. You'd say, before I came to this service this evening, I'd already sensed that God in my heart wanted me to serve Him in some type of a full-time fashion, and that's why I'm here tonight. Doesn't make you any better than anybody else. It's just a fact of where you're at in life. You'd say, Brother Beal, I'm here tonight because I've already sensed and I've already yielded to the fact that God wants me to serve Him in some kind of full-time aspect of ministry. Although you may not have all the details, you may not know the ultimate destination, you know that that's the condition of your heart. If that's you tonight, would you slip your hand up and keep it up just a moment? All right, thank you. You may put them down. You know, if that's the case tonight, it certainly doesn't make you a better citizen than anybody else, but it's certainly something to be respected, and I appreciate you stepping out on faith to do that. Now, I want to ask this question. I wonder how many of you here tonight, you'd say, Brother Beal, I know God's called me. I just was raised my hand in that host that you just asked the question for, but I know I've had a horrible tendency of relying on myself, of being self-centered. I've had a horrible tendency of getting distracted by the world. Had a horrible tendency of doubting myself and being so insecure and vacillating at times. But tonight, I know that not only has God called me to do that, but to serve Him in some full-time capacity, but you say tonight, I know there's a renewed need for me to put my flag in the ground again, afresh and anew. I'm not talking about surrendering as far as, well, let's come and just have another dose of decisions for full-time service. But I'm talking about those, listen, you've already surrendered, you've reached that point, but you've already been stretched to a point where you've doubted yourself at times. And tonight, God has refocused your heart. You say, Brother Beal, that's me. Would you slip your hand up tonight? All right, you can put them down. Let me tell you why that's a beautiful sight tonight. You know why it's a beautiful sight? It's a beautiful sight because there are people in this room that realize that God is the answer. And God's pointed to the insufficiency of your heart. In a few moments, I'm just going to ask you to come. We're going to have a song of invitation, I Surrender All Tonight. I just want you to come. You know your weaknesses. You know your insecurities. You know the things that have sidetracked you. And tonight, just put your flag in the ground afresh and anew and say, Lord, I've had to revisit here. Thank you for helping me refocus and cast your excuses to the wind. But here's another question I want to ask tonight, and I close with this. I wonder how many of you in this room would say this. You'd say, Brother Beal, when I came to this service tonight, truth is, I had no clue. But as I sit here tonight, and it may be the product of the working of God in your heart long before you ever came to this service. I'm not naive enough to think that God would just do a work tonight. For some of you, it's been a work in progress. But I wonder how many of you here tonight would say, you know, Brother Beal, tonight God has dealt in my heart. I've fought it, I've struggled with it, I've wrestled with it. But tonight I know that I need to surrender for some. I need to surrender for full-time Christian service. God's been burdening my heart for it. You may not have all the details, but tonight God brings it to a close in your life and says, listen, this is your burning bush moment. I wonder how many in this room tonight, you'd say, Brother Beal, tonight, I know that my night tonight needs to be spent and saying, all right, Lord, surrendering and yielding for full-time Christian service. That's God's work in my heart tonight. I know that it needs to take place, and I'm willing to cast off my excuses and my insufficiency, and tonight I want to surrender my life for full-time Christian service. That's the work God's done in my heart tonight. If that's you, would you slip your hand up tonight? Just slip it up high. Would you do it? Just slip it up high. Don't you leave this place clinging to your excuses tonight. Leave it clinging to God. Would you join me in standing? Our heads are bowed, our eyes are closed. Father, tonight, I pray that in a moment that your servants, as you've dealt in their hearts, Lord, they'd yield to you. And I pray that tonight that we would leave in this altar our worries. We'd leave our insecurities. Lord, that we'd leave our desires here and we'd leave this place with a renewed vision and intensity in your calling. May you help us in these moments that we have left, in Jesus' name.